This is the Norman Wymanetta National Transportation Policy Summit on using bicycles for the first and last mile of a transport commute. It is being co-sponsored by the Commonwealth Club of California, the Mineta Transportation Institute, and the U.S. Department of Transportation, Federal Transit Administration, and sponsored in addition by the Bay Area Metropolitan Transportation Commission, Caltrain, San Jose Department of Transportation, San Jose Mercury News, Santa Clara Valley Bicycle Coalition, Silicon Valley Leadership Group, and Valley Transportation Authority. We especially thank each of those co-sponsors for assisting our outreach efforts and in implementing the results of this effort once it's concluded. I should note that this is the second in a sequence of National Transportation Policy Summits on Bicycle Safety. The last was a year ago. This follows that effort and has been specifically requested by the leaders of the Congressional Transportation Committees. The transcript of this proceedings will be provided to those legislative leaders and will be the input device for a study on this subject and transportation, bicycle transportation safety generally, that's being conducted by the Mineta Transportation Institute. I'd like to proceed into this process now by noting that the keynote speaker for our morning session is Carl Guardino. Carl is the president of the Silicon Valley, president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Carl's, all of the bios are in your packet and will be in the proceedings, so we're not going to have long introductions. But I would like to stress that Carl is probably, I don't, without question, the lead transportation advocate in our region for not only general transportation, but especially for alternative modes of transportation. Carl, as the leader of the manufacturing leadership of our valley, the organization that was founded by David Packard back in the 1970s and continues to be stronger than ever, has himself been identified as one of the 10 most powerful people in our valley and has led many transportation and transit elections and initiatives both in Santa Clara Valley and statewide, and we really appreciate that guidance. Most importantly, he has a wife and daughter who live in Los Gatos, who are also, at least the wife, is a community leader. The daughter will be at one point in her life, I'm sure, with those role models. Carl, if you'd like to come forward and begin the keynote portion. As Carl is coming forward, let me caution that each one of the panelists will have no more than 15 minutes, and that will allow then the protection of time for a lot of questions and answers between the panelists and with the audience. So without any further ado, let me introduce to you Carl Guardino, the President and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Carl?
It is such an honor to be here this morning, but I have to correct just one item that my friend and mentor, Rod Dyrdon, just mentioned. He mentioned that we have one daughter. We, as of 18 days ago, have two daughters. And I think it's especially important that I mention that new addition to our family because it may impact this morning's presentation. Dick Cheney has been in the news a lot lately, and it's been about what is torture and what's not. And a few years ago, they were debating whether a lack of sleep is torture. Let me tell you, a lack of sleep is a form of torture. For the past 18 days, we've had very little of that. And let me just tell the story quickly. It was 18 days ago on Saturday night, May 16th, that about 10 o'clock that night, we received a call from an attorney in Ogden, Utah, that a teenage mom had given birth to a daughter that evening and had selected us as her top choice as the family to adopt her daughter. And if we could get out to Utah by the next day. So we went online. Priceline is very good. Got our tickets, flew to Utah on Sunday evening after racing in a triathlon that morning, and Monday morning walked out of the hospital with a baby girl that we named after one of our favorite areas to cycle through in Tuscany, Siena. So Siena Alexandra Guardino is now a part of our family, and we just got back from Utah after being there for 15 days to go through the legal and medical process on Sunday evening. How is that relevant? If I make no sense today, if I am completely incoherent, or for those of you who know me well, more incoherent than normal, you now know the reason why. So let's jump right in. I'm going to start with our mutual love of cycling. And there are many reasons why people love to cycle. First, health and exercise. And again, with a 4.5-year-old daughter and an 18-day-old daughter, a big concern of my wife and I is sedentary children in our society. Four out of 10 kids today in the United States is overweight or obese. These are kids. We're raising a culture of children to be sitting playing video games rather than playing outside, riding their bikes and getting exercise. So some are motivated to cycle from that concern. A second motivation for many is related, and that's diet and weight control. 1 out of 4 adults in the United States is overweight or obese, and those numbers are growing almost annually. And what a great way to maintain our weight and have a healthy diet then through cycling. The third is environment and climate change. In California, 41% of our greenhouse gases are from our daily transportation decisions. In the Bay Area, where we're supposed to be so environmentally friendly, it's 50%. It's higher. And this is an easy way to make that change. The fourth is traffic and commute. Yes, we've all read recent reports from the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and others, as reported in the Mercury News, the Chronicle, and other publications, that traffic is down primarily because of our economy. But in almost every year out of the past 30 years in the annual Bay Area poll, traffic congestion and commutes is either the number one concern or the number two concern. And this is a great way to bypass that traffic and have a stress-free commute. For me, all those reasons are good. Mine was different. I fell in love with the triathlete. 9 years ago, I knew that if I had any chance of dating then Leslie Coleman, I had better get on a bike. So she loaned me hers. It had the cages rather than clip-ons. I would have killed myself on a clip-on in those days anyway. So I took my tennis shoes, put my feet in the cage, and tried to keep up with her for just 15 miles on Foothill Expressway, and I failed miserably. But she was cute, I was consistent, we're now married for 6 years with 2 children, and my love for her and my love for cycling still exist. So let me quickly mention that I think I was invited here because, like all of you, I try to do my best to pedal what I preach. I ride about 10,000 miles a year. A little over 5,000 of that is biking for my commute. I commute by bike 4 days a week when I'm not on business travel. 4 days a week, 16 miles each way each day from Los Gatos to downtown San Jose. And it is a fantastic way to start and end each work day. It also allows me to eat as much chocolate as I would like, and it is terrific. And it's something kind of fascinating, too. I'm going to allude to this a little later, but I've been doing this now for 3 years. I started at 3 days a week for the first 2 years. This year I made a commitment to do 4 days a week, and I have been actually beating that average, almost 4.5 days a week for this year. And it's incredible. I ride into work as the CEO of the leadership group. It's amazing. Even after 16 miles of riding in, no one in my office has ever said, "I smell bad." See, when you're CEO, you have that advantage. So let me jump right in as we talk about the first and last miles of a commute by bike, because there's a role for each of us to play. And while much of today's focus, I understand, will be on the role of employers and transit providers, I'd also like to add local and state government, cyclists, and advocates for cycling. So let me jump in first with employers. I think the work that the Silicon Valley Bicycle Coalition recently did about what are the top concerns of people who either commute to work by cycling or would like to really resonate. Let me repeat them from my perspective. I think the number one is showers or just a place to clean up. And that is key for many people. What I think is fascinating, though, is it doesn't always mean a shower. We have shower facilities in our building complex that we have access to. Some of my colleagues who are cyclists take advantage of that. I just go into the men's room and clean up a little bit. Either way, it's knowing that you have a way to clean up is key. The second, though, of course, is storage. I think we're all concerned about a safe place to get our bike, whether it's a used bike that we got on Craigslist or eBay for $50 or $100, or a racing bike. No one likes that feeling of violation and inconvenience of having their bicycle stolen. I wheel mine right in. And at the leadership group, we have a policy. People bring them right in to their offices, their cubicles, in our hallways at the office. 5 out of 17 of us on our compensated staff ride at least one day a week. It's part of our culture. But there is a safe place to store our bikes. Third is support of the company. And that's where a CEO's role comes into play in such an important way. We tried to emphasize this in a much more significant way a few years ago, tying into National Bike to Work Week and Bike to Work Day that is organized here in the region. We kicked off what we call our CEO Celebrity Cycle to Work Day Challenge. And it's pretty simple. We reached out to CEOs and local elected officials to take part in a three-part pledge. One, ride to work themselves that day. Two, encourage their Bay Area, if not worldwide, employees to do the same. Three, personally host a celebration station at the worksite for those employees who participate so that the employees can see firsthand that this is an accepted and valued practice in the worksite. And it is amazing. This year we had nearly 60 CEOs and local elected officials take that three-part pledge, representing more than 100,000 employees just right here in the Bay Area alone. And it's pretty remarkable. Again, well, first you have to get past the mental image of seeing your CEO in spandex. That is not always the best mental image you want to have. But when you get past that, it's pretty amazing the results that we saw in people coming together and celebrating that culture of a healthy lifestyle and commuting to work by bike. And when the CEO does it to the workers, it has that cool factor, again, that it's an accepted practice within the workplace. So those are three roles that we believe employers can play on an everyday basis. Let me mention some of the heroes in that, too. You've probably heard of Brocade, a $2.6 billion annual revenue company, 48 straight quarters of growth, even through this bad economy, led by a phenomenal CEO named Mike Klayko. Well, he rides to work when he's not traveling 2 to 3 days a week from Saratoga to San Jose by San Jose International Airport on his bike. He practices what he preaches. The employees participate it, appreciate it, see it, and then replicate it as well. The second is for transit providers. And I think the three keys, you'll be hearing a lot more about this, I'm sure, from our panel, but I think the three keys that we'd like to see is there space for my bike? Are there policies in place that encourage bicycle commuting? And is there funding in place to make sure that those policies can be held up? Years ago, we were working with Byron Scherer when he was an assembly member, before he was a senator, on a bill called AB 434, which allowed the Bay Area Air Quality Management District to impose a $4 per vehicle license fee in the 9-county Bay Area, and to use those funds for programs like bicycle commuting. If you've noticed for the last 10 or 12 years, VTA has taken advantage of those funds to have the racks in the front of buses and place on the light rail trains for bikes. Some of that funding was through that funding source. Those are the types of policies that transit providers can and have taken advantage of to make sure there's room for all types of commuters as we extend that first and last mile. I really take advantage of that because on especially rainy days or other days when it's needed, I can jump on light rail near my office or here in downtown, get off at the Winchester station in Campbell, and ride the rest of the way to and from my home. That is a great amenity made incredibly easy by the Valley Transportation Authority, so kudos to them. Some of our other transit providers are having the additional burden of great ridership and wanting to accommodate all forms of travelers. And I think you're going to hear about that more from our panel. And those are difficult decisions to make with very full trains on BART and on Caltrain. And how do we accommodate everyone? I've ridden and used my bike on both systems. On some systems, BART is, I think, a notable example. When you can't use it on all trains or during all times, that's really tough when you're trying to use it as a commute mode. With Caltrain, who Mike Scanlon, who I know personally and professionally, one of the finest general managers of a transit agency in the United States, loves cyclists. How do they deal with the dilemma of full trains wanting to be used by both cyclists and people on foot? It's something they're still struggling with. I think you're going to hear more about those efforts this morning by Mark Simon on how they're trying to work with it. Our key as cyclists is to work in a constructive way with VTA, with Caltrain, with BART, with other transit providers so that we all win and that we deal with those last and first mile issues. Local and state government, we also think, is key on the planning side, on the delivery side, and on the funding side. We're going to talk a little bit about that more later. Fourth is us. How many of us in this room are active cyclists? Keep your hands up if at least one day a week you also cycle to work. I love this room. We're with each other here. So about half of us cycle to work at least one day a week. I was thinking over the weekend, do I talk about the don'ts as cycling or the do's? So let's talk about the do's. And this was reinforced this morning on First in San Fernando, as I was coming here, and a cycling commuter was riding towards me. No helmet, riding with one hand, went right through a red light, right in front of a police officer, on the wrong side of the street, and then went on the sidewalk with all the pedestrians right after that. How does that reflect on all of us? Let alone the safety of that individual and everyone around him. So, the do's. Do obey the law. Can you imagine if that were a car this morning? How would we feel about a car on the wrong side of the road, running a red light, and going on the sidewalk? Well, then why is it okay for a cyclist? It's not okay, but it happens every day, and I think we all see it every day. Second, please wear a helmet. This person, of course, was not. But I like my brains on the inside of my skull rather than the outside. And it's such a simple step to take. Third, stop and yield. How many of us every day see another cyclist go right through a light or a rolling stop sign? Just rolling right through it. We're taking our lives in our hands, but we're also taking the lives of others in our hands and the reputations of every single cyclist in our hand. The next one, and this one took me a while to get over, as Gary Richards knows, who called me one time years ago and caught me. Pay attention. Don't use your cell phone on your bike. It's illegal, and it's unsafe. don't wear your iPod plugs while you're cycling. You can't hear emergency vehicles. You can't hear those cars around you. John Brazil will tell you, if the data is still current, that more than half of the accidents between autos and cars are the cyclists' fault. More than half the time, we are at fault. But here's the difference. Make note. In a crash between a car and a cyclist, the car is dented. The cyclist often dies. This is flesh, not metal, and it's not worth the risk. We have a responsibility. And that's the fifth area. All of us in this room, to one degree or another, are advocates. And advocates are most successful when we peddle what we preach and obey the law and take advantage of doing what is right. Years ago, a member of this panel and I tried to form something in Silicon Valley called Courteous Mass. It was in direct response to something done a little further up the road that I am critical of, that I won't name by name, where cyclists show that we are part of the transportation system. But if we do it in a courteous way, we win more friends and allies on the roads, in the legislature, in city halls, than we do if we act like the roads are only ours. So as advocates, let's make sure we live up to that. And I'd like to end this morning on that note with what I would like to call a Golden Helmet Award to seven folks in our region and state who I believe are key advocates in the public, nonprofit, and private sectors. One is on your panel this morning, Corinne Winter, took what was a very good but pretty sleepy organization called the Silicon Valley Bicycle Coalition, rejuvenated that organization into a relevant, positive, proactive force that works on programs and policies, education and information that has really turned cycling around in our region. So, Corinne Winter, you are a recipient of our Golden Helmet Award. The second is San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed. As advocates and cyclists, if you are not supporting his green vision for San Jose and Silicon Valley, please look into it. One of the actionable items in that green vision is 100 miles of bike trails and paths in San Jose. Can you imagine if we had 100 miles? My commute, I told you, is 16 ways in, and because of the way I have to go back, is 16 miles in and 17 miles back. 10 of the 16 and 10 of the 17 are on trail, and then 6 are on roads. What a difference that would make if all 16 or all 17 were on trail. Not only from an enjoyment standpoint, but from a safety and pollution and stress standpoint as well. Look into the green vision, but the mayor in absentia deserves the Golden Helmet Award. The third is Paul Krutko. If you don't know Paul, he is the head of the Office of Economic Development in the city of San Jose. He helps put on the Tour of California stages that have come here that get people excited about cycling at a professional and then hopefully as a recreational and transportation level. But what he deserves the Golden Helmet Award for is for the past 3 years, we have co-promoted a Sierra Road King of the Mountain challenge before the Tour of California to get, again, people instilled in the belief that cycling is good as a healthy lifestyle as well as a commute mode. The fourth is at the state level. Will Kempton is the director of transportation the head of Caltrans for California. If you didn't know it, he's not only an avid athlete, but a huge cycling supporter. Deputy Directive 64, the Complete Streets Program, is key to his work there, that every transportation road improvement in California, to the best that it can, should accommodate cyclists and pedestrians. And every time that we have a California Transportation Commission meeting on which I serve, he prods me to publicly prod him on every project we review and approve to make sure it's meeting DD 64. That's the type of advocate we need at Caltrans. The next one on the private sector is Andy Ball, who's the CEO of WebCor. If you don't know Andy, you've probably seen the 400-plus cyclists wearing the green WebCor jerseys riding around. They obey the traffic laws, by the way. I think Andy insists on it. But what he has done to promote women cycling and cycling by all in our region and state has been phenomenal. The next is Sam Liccardo, who's the vice chair of the Valley Transportation Authority, the downtown San Jose City Council member. And if you're not supporting Sam's work on better bicycle facilities in San Jose that he is trying to push through the legislative process in San Jose, please get on board. He needs your help. He wants to make it safer for all of us, and he, too, is a cyclist. The final of our Golden Helmet Awards, this rounding out the seven, is Michael Burns, the general manager of the Valley Transportation Authority. He rides his bike not only on Bike to Work Day in San Francisco to Caltrain, down to downtown San Jose, riding it up to his office. He doesn't just do it once a year, which is good by itself. He does it whenever he can. And again, he continues to promulgate practices at VTA to make sure that buses and light rail are friendly for cycling commuters. So with that, I want to thank you for putting up with my sleep-deprived state. I will end with this true story as I turn it back over to Rod Diridon. We not only adopted a daughter 18 days ago, but a week later, my wife got the flu. We quarantined her to protect the baby. So I took care of her, the 4.5-year-old, the 7-day-old, and myself, before I then got the flu as she recovered. Managed to throw my back out while making one of many return trips to the bathroom for what the flu had done to my body, and ended up flat on my back for 3 days, and then continuing with the midnight, 3 a.m., 6 a.m., every three-hour feeding of trading off. So I want to thank you for your patience today, but more importantly, for what you're doing every day to promote cycling. A little flu and a bad back weren't going to keep me from this wonderful opportunity to talk about something that we mutually love. We can make great progress if we continue to work together. Thank you very much for your time.